presents the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Tech Talk, the podcast where we explore the technology of sci-fi. I'm Mike McPeak, and with me today is Julie Keel.
Hello.
And Jeff Sire.
Hello, everybody.
And some days I think we ought to rename this podcast Watching Crap so you all don't have to. But today we're going to watch the movie Event Horizon. And so the synopsis is: a rescue crew investigates a spaceship that has disappeared into a black hole and has now returned with someone or something on board. I watched this thing and my first impression was Pinhead meets Aliens. Then I'm reading through the trivia afterwards, and Clive Barker was part of post-production. So I don't know, maybe there was something to that. But yeah, it's a movie.
Yeah. Okay, on the upside, let's start with the good stuff, although maybe we should finish with it. From a tech perspective, this was kind of awesome. I mean, we cover so many awesome movies that have like zero tech. This is the opposite. This has a lot of really cool tech, and it's a shit movie. Sorry, there goes the explicit tag. But yeah, I mean, there was some really cool, both visual and, you know, technobabble stuff going on. Gravitational drive, gravity engine, you know, warping. They were going faster than light by warping, you know, the space-time continuum. And
They weren't going faster than light, though.
Well, that's what they...
creating a wormhole. So they were going from one point to another instantaneously without traveling in between.
Right, but...
so it was the equivalent to faster than light.
Right, yeah. You can't get from here to 1,000 light years away in 10 minutes without going faster than light. And they happen, you know, you actually do travel that distance, but you don't actually move at the speed of faster than light.
Yeah. Like, wise. It's not bad. I did find it a little perturbing. Like when they showed the drive, like I would have just wished that whole, drive thing was just kind of fenced off and it was just a control panel, because like, okay, there's three rings and a big
it looked like a big old Stargate.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, and the inside of Professor X's whatever his mind control thing is, like, been redecorated by some SNF fantasy. But like, okay, I would have wished they just had a control panel rather than that, but the explanation for what was happening was pretty good, and they really could have just left it like, oh, we've got this really cool drive, except for the fact they're using the name. Like, the term Event Horizon is a cool term, so I can see why they wanted to use that. It's a cool name for a movie.
Right.
It's too bad the movie didn't live up to the name.
Right.
Well, yeah, and the problem I had with that, the black hole chamber, whatever you wanted to call it, you know, I noticed it and it just started bugging me. They had these spikes inside the chamber, sticking out of the wall.
Yeah, for absolutely no reason.
Right, yeah. Right.
And I don't know if I was disappointed or relieved that during different scenes in there, nobody was impaled
on it. Which was tantalizingly close a couple of times, yes.
Yeah. So at least I don't know if I was disappointed or not. But
you have
a big pool of water there for absolutely no reason at all as well.
But you say for no reason. The very little information we got on how the gravity drive worked was magnetic. And potentially those spikes could play into a magnetic field arrangement of some sort.
But also keep in mind, you never saw it in that room, but a lot of the ship's time is spent in zero G. Well, that, okay, the one thing you really probably don't want at all is a pool of water when you're going to zero G.
Right.
Like, you know, pointless. Just annoying.
Yeah. There was...
this was like a sci-fi movie, but they decided to cut some corners and not have any sort of technical consultant.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, we'll go to the prop guys and have them design some really cool stuff, but we won't talk to anybody that, you know, like, that has any sort of even sat down and thought about this stuff for a while. So.
Well, I think they were kind of going for the space gore thing, because and I apparently didn't watch that part close enough, but in one part there where the blood orgy video or whatever was, must have been towards the end of the movie or whatever. There was parts that they didn't put in there. It was things like, people having, being covered in blood and having violent sex and raping and eating each other. And then there was other things too, like, somebody crawling along and people hitting his legs with steel bars until his legs start to break off and he just keeps crawling along. You know, they were really trying to go for the gore factor. And this is stuff that got cut out.
Really? Because so, I kind of saw some of those.
Some of them, but I think there was even more than that in there.
It was supposed to be a lot longer. Okay. I read that somewhere as
That's
well.
Good, yeah. Because it was plenty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Even things like a girl with screws screwed into her teeth. It was just creepy, gory stuff. That's what brought to mind Hellraiser. And then when I saw Clive Barker was, like, say, post-production, I kind of get it now.
Yeah. It did remind me a lot of Hellraiser as well, yeah.
Especially towards the end when Sam Neill had his face kind of, like, stitched together. Or,
right, very much
something
so.
Like this.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, the minute you said that, that's the image that came to my mind.
Also, the in Hellraiser, the cube has all those intricate designs on it. That even reminded me of the inside of the gravity drive chamber. Like the walls had all those intricate designs on them.
So, yeah, I saw things. It's been a long time since I watched Hellraiser, but like I say, some of that stuff kind of come back to me. The pinhead stuff and that. So yeah, it did kind of. And again. It made for an interesting movie, but it was completely pointless as far as I can tell to have all that stuff in there. But like I say, it looked nice.
Yeah. If you get away from the gore of all of this and the whatever, it kind of is the big old sci-fi movie trope of. People go to outer space and go beyond what we know and wind up someplace really, really bad. I mean, this is kind of almost the same thing like breaking the sound barrier. You know, people are going to like collapse and die, just by breaking the sound barrier. Well, I get a little tired of that. The idea that everything out there in space, I much prefer the gravity version of space, I don't want to call it horror, but, space difficulty, space is trying to kill you, where it's just the reality of space is trying to kill you. You don't need to go into another dimension and discover what is known as hell or something like it to have bad things happen. I mean, I would much rather deal with the reality of the difficulties of space than the made-up horrors of space.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff out there to kill you without worrying about going to hell or anything. So
yeah.
Kind of like the movie Gravity, which was, they were in space and crap was happening. You didn't have to bring in any multidimensional anything. It's just, things here can be hell sometimes.
Well,
so, yeah,
and going back to Europa Report, same thing there. I mean, it was the same general plot line. People go to space, find something that they've never seen before, and bad shit happens. But at least that one was more like we've run into the unknown that we weren't prepared for, type of thing, as opposed to we ran into the gates of hell.
Yeah. And there was nothing in Europa Report that you would look at and say, well, that couldn't happen.
Right.
Like, there's stuff that you could look at in Europa Report and say, well, that couldn't happen today, but there's no reason to believe that within 10 or 15 or 20 years we couldn't, do those things that they're doing. And even when they land on Europa and see the alien life form and, well, sure, that everything that you saw in Europa Report was within the realm of believability. Mm-hmm. Like this Event Horizon is a horror film that they're not even trying to make believable.
Right.
Yeah,
because there were so many times in this where in Event Horizon where I'm like, just blow the damn ship up. I mean, stop trying to save everybody. Yeah. Kill everybody and be done with it. This isn't going to end well. Just kill everybody before more bad stuff happens. It's,
And I'm a little now we're getting into real nitpicking stuff, but I'm a little sick of we're assembling this team to go and do this, to go and do this incredibly challenging thing, and yet as an integral part of this team, we've picked somebody who's obviously insane.
Right.
Look, what? Nobody noticed that?
Okay. Like, you're talking about Dr. Weir?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about him. Because was he insane? Or did he just get infected at some point? Because he wanted to go. I mean, he was the creator of the gravity drive and wanted to go out and see what his invention had gotten into. And there was one point in the movie where, like, his eyes, they did a close-up of his eyes, and it was like they went to the other side. And that was almost like, to me, that I got the impression that he had been, like, for lack of a better term, possessed at that point. And then he was no longer safe at all. He was insane, yeah. or inhuman at that point. I don't know that that's one that you could have found ahead of time?
I don't know if it'd be insane, but I do think he did feel like he was kind of driven. That is kind of another trope. Smart people are, you know, driven, edgy, you know, I don't know, something like that. Not necessarily insane, but, you know, when they're going out there, doesn't tell them a lot, or, you know, they're all brought in and they have to go do this. And so, he's just kind of forced on them. But, you know, he does have that kind of intensity sometimes. And I realize sometimes smart people can be intense and not necessarily understandable sometimes. But it does seem like that's, to me, it seems a little overused. How about just some guy that comes in that's smart, relaxed? You know, you might feel like hanging out and having a beer with them or something, you know, rather than these, you know, these edgy guys. Be a nice change.
Yeah, and gravity played into this as well, but this is almost another trope, too, where you have an existing team that runs the spaceship, and then they bring on the one guy, you know. It's a specialist of some sort that doesn't really know how things run, and they just have to put up with his arrogant ass or her arrogant ass. And, you know, and they always cause problems. Really? So that's – I don't know if that's a more likely scenario than the rest of this, but that feels kind of like bad trope to me too.
Yeah.
You know?
I just think over and over again, this is a plot that we see in – all kinds of movies, and it becomes like a central plot in a lot of stories, and a man like that just doesn't happen. Like for the last probably close to 100 years, well, even longer than the last couple 100 years, we've had crews of people who were on ships who were at sea for long periods of time, like even into the 1700s, like some of the trips, like going from England to the East Indies, like, you know, like they were at sea for years. Mm-hmm. And yes, they did have mutinies, but those were really the exception rather than the rule. And those, you know, things were run back in the old days far more authoritarian than they are today. Like, it just strikes me as, like, this is something we have a lot of experience with, but yet they go back to this well over and over, like, oh, this one loose cannon just starts sabotaging things and blowing things up, and, like, okay, like, I don't know. It just seems really, really tired to me.
Yeah, it's, I agree, and maybe it's because we watch too many sci-fi shows, and classic sci-fi trope at this point, or plot line, but yeah, it's ones like Gravity or Europa Report, yeah, where they keep the horror, the challenge, the tragedy believable, that really, for us, at least for me, is a good movie. It's when you slide over to places like where this one goes, where it's just the horror out there just for horror's sake, and all it does is make people, for lack of a better term, afraid of space, make things space is a bad thing, and why do we need to go out there, and, you know, there's nothing good can come of it. You know, it's like, stop, just stop, okay? So, yeah, but, you know, as far as horror movies go, it was, you know, as well done as any.
I mean, oh, and to go back to the tech stuff for a minute, maybe I missed something, but right at the start when they find the event horizon, they're in orbit above Neptune.
Which looks like Earth.
And yeah. And then they're saying, which, you know, Neptune, as far as I know, has, you know, very little in the way of atmosphere. And this certainly had a lot of atmosphere.
Oh, yeah. No, it had
all
Earth.
Kinds of clouds and everything.
Clouds and water and storms.
But they had they right at the start, they say, oh, it's in a decaying orbit. And then they never make reference to that again. And they were saying, oh, you know, and when they're going in, there's all this chop, and they get there, and then everything's fine. They didn't seem to have to change the orbit. They didn't have to go up to a higher orbit or anything. Okay, well, you're still in this shitty decaying orbit. And, like, if you're already in, you know, this fictionalized thick atmosphere, you should be, I would think that you'd be losing speed and crashing. That didn't seem to be any concern at all once they docked. I don't know, maybe their tiny, tiny, tiny little ship was able to pull this giant behemoth up to a higher orbit or something.
Yeah, well, and that didn't really seem to be an issue. The whole what was going on Neptune and what was going on. And the one thing I didn't quite understand, too, there was a point in there where everything was falling apart, and they were grabbing carbon filters and whatever because all they needed to survive was like 10 or 20 hours or something. Where in the heck were they going to go in 20 hours?
What's the panic to get carbon filters? Like, well, you went out there with only half the carbon filters you needed?
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have enough carbon filters to get home? What the
– I know.
What's going on?
The way I understood that one was they'd taken them out of the Lewis and Clark, the ship that came there, and put them in this one to try and filter the air out. And I think that was after.
Yeah, things had gone bad. Things had exploded by then, yep.
And so they had to move over to this ship. Was it the hull was punctured or whatever, and they're trying to patch that one up. So they brought the carbon filters over from the Lewis and Clark onto the Event Horizon to try and filter the air. Well, then they were going to try and leave. And so they were trying to grab the filters and take them back with them?
Well, that's like the Lewis and Clark was like, what, maybe 1/100th the size?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like, oh, the tiny little carbon scrubbers that they have is going to be enough to to filter all of the air that's on this giant, you know, ship. Oh.
Yeah. I still wasn't sure where they were headed in 20 hours. I mean, where were they going to go that's all the more – you know, fresh air they needed. I'm like,
well, unless they were thinking 20 hours to get away from there and then put themselves in suspended animation or whatever until they could get out because, I was trying to find it here. Was it 72 days later they were rescued? What was the?
Yeah, I think it was 70. That rings a bell.
Yeah, somewhere. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, 20 hours to get them away and get themselves settled in and aim towards Earth and put on an emergency beacon. That's the way I kind of went at it. But still, yeah, to try and those little things for that big area would seem a little stupid.
Yeah, and what you said makes sense. But then again, why would only 20 hours of carbon filters be sufficient? I mean,
unless that was all they were going to be awake, because I would guess
that
when
could
they're
be.
Stasis, they don't need the carbon filter
that's,
running.
Okay, thank you for that, because that probably would be it. Because I keep going back to the Martian. It's like, you know, it's like 4 years till somebody can get out there. It's like,
but again, like once you're in stasis, like you're still, you know, you still have to breathe. You're going to be breathing at a slower pace and everything. But they never really said how that worked, except that was another thing. the stasis thing. Okay, their bodies are packed in water. That makes sense. Okay, I can understand that. Like maybe even if they're breathing some hyper oxygenated fluid, so their lungs are full of water, because then you could withstand, rapid accelerations, you know, like 20 G's or something like that.
Right.
If you didn't have any gas at all in your body would stand up to those G forces better. I get that. But when you're taking a person out of stasis, couldn't you come up with a better plan than just the thing opens and all this water splashes on the floor?
Right.
Like a half-assed, stupid way of doing it.
And they're gasping for breath.
The water out, yes. And then the person wakes up gently rather than falling out under their knees in a big puddle of water.
Yeah, guys, there's this thing called a valve, and if you open it, you can control the flow of the water. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not as dramatic, maybe. I don't know, but it would be dramatic to have them stand there as the water kind of comes down. But yeah, it's just more fun to dump somebody on the ground. So well, what we're saying is scientists or sadists or something. I don't know.
And this was the horror. This was the sci-fi horror of all of a sudden somebody threw into the scene. And, you know, there was, especially early on in the movie, the number of times where somebody, it's a nice quiet scene, and all of a sudden somebody, I'm out. Ah! Like, okay. Like, I understand it's a horror movie. You know, just people just jump out of the, you know, closets for no reason and scare you. Oh, I didn't mean to startle you.
No doubt. You know, the one thing that I really did like. Parts
totally ham fisted.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Mm. There was a couple of things that were ham fisted in this movie. Several, actually. The blood, guts, and gore being one of them. One thing I did like, though. I don't know the character's name. I didn't bother to look it up, but there was one gal on there. She was in the medical wing or whatever, and stuff was going down. Bad stuff was going down. Terrifying stuff was going down. And she didn't scream. It was totally – I kept watching that going, that's exactly what I would do. I'm not a screamer. I would stop breathing, or I would start breathing, you know, rapidly or something. But I would, you know, I watching her reaction, it's like, oh, finally, somebody who doesn't just, you know, scream like the Star Trek 2009 movie, you know, gal in underwear screaming for no good reason, just, you know, whatever. There are multiple ways that people respond to terrifying situations, and the fact that I don't think anybody screamed on this particular show, other than in pain, was, you know, different, notable. I mean, I noticed. So, thank you. The one thing good this movie did.
Well, let's see here. What do we have? I'm looking at the tech here. Let's see here. Black holes, the multiverse.
I wrote that down. So, the multiverse idea is that there's you hear it talked about bubble universes or the multiverse. The idea is that the Big Bang is just kind of like a bubble that's shooting out of multiple other dimensions. So I did like that part of it, in that they kind of made a side reference to it, that when the Event Horizon activated its gravity drive, that it didn't just open a hole to Alpha Centauri, or Proxima Centauri, where they said it was headed to, that it actually opened up a hole that went outside of our universe into another universe. I think they kind of went off the rail when they said that it went to a universe of ultimate evil. But
yeah,
right.
Yeah. But that's something that when you read, you know, better sci-fi, that they do talk about, that it might be possible to skip from one universe into another universe that was kind of like side by side with ours, if you could jump from one to another.
Fringe, remember that show?
Yeah.
That entire show was based on that premise. And I really, really liked that show, or at least most of it. It's interesting too, and we did that just recently, where they had what show were we watching, where the guy kept bouncing back and forth between multiple universes until he arrived at one where he hadn't done the bad thing. And remember that? Met the girl in the cafe. What the heck?
Oh, that was that wasn't multiple universes. That was
timelines.
Oh. Yeah,
it was a timeline that he was predestination with the movie. Yeah, he was jumping within his own universe, but different times in his own lifetime.
Well, okay, so in his own universe, but different timelines within a single universe. Okay,
right. That's right. Yeah.
Okay, which to me sounds like also a multiverse, because you've got multiple. Multiple
times. Well, there is. I think in that movie, it was one straight timeline, and he was just jumping back and forth. But there is, I know I've read other sci-fi things where they talk about that Well, and it's not just sci-fi. They say that in quantum theory, the idea is that if something's in a quantum state, that all of the different states exist at the same time until you determine which one, and then the whole thing collapses into one state. But then there's a belief that says that all those other states represent other multiple universes. So every time a quantum event gets decided, our universe branches out into all the different possible results. So like our universe is, we're just on one stream of, you know, limitless, you know, trillions and trillions of quantum decisions that are all happening at the same time. Just every time one of these decisions happens, the universe splits and goes, you know, two different ways for whatever the, you know, the decision was. So that there might be some way to jump from your branch to one of these other branches where a different decision caused different outcomes.
My brain hurts.
Yeah. And I just want to know, where's the multiverse with fairies and unicorns in it? Because every time they go into a different multiverse, it's always evil. Even in Star Trek, where they, you know, the episode, I can't remember the one where they met their evil counterparts from another dimension or whatever it was. They're evil. I want to see the ones where, you know, Gandhi comes out, or, you know, something, you know, peace, love, and whatever comes out.
We go there and find out that we're the evil ones.
Yeah, that's it. Actually, and the few times we've crossed into places that look like Eden or whatever, we found out that there's something nefarious going on there, too. I mean, it's not what it appears.
Those are all poison.
Yeah, there's, you're thinking of the same one. So, okay. Side note, since everything goes back to Star Trek, oh my God, our cable company just introduced a channel called Heroes and Icons, and it is nonstop Star Trek 5 nights a week and plus Sundays. And beyond that, it's like Xena and Hercules, and I'm dying. I can't get anything done.
Well, there goes productivity shot the hill.
I know.
Damn you, cable company.
I know. It. Like Star Trek starts at like 6 o'clock at night and ends at midnight. I'm like, oh, damn. Every night. So anyway,
and you know, after 6 hours of Star Trek, you know what you want the next day? 6 hours of Star Trek.
That's right, more. What's really fun too is they're doing it in order. It's TOS, TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, and it's interesting doing that because you can see it progressively get better. You know, in my opinion.
Well, I'd agree. I think Enterprise was really.
Underrated.
Sold short.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot better than.
Yeah. Every than time people. I watch it, I'm like, holy cow, why did this get such a bad rap? This is freaking awesome. But anyway, back to Event Horizon. Oh, God, there's a leap. Ugh. Talk about taking a step backwards.
Or stepping in something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
no, go ahead.
You know, the one thing that was curious about. Not curious, but Event Horizon, they weren't. A lot of times, evil is for a reason, you know? We're going to take over the Borg. You know, we're going to take over and assimilate and gather resources to, you know, do our own stuff. This one, in Event Horizon, just, it felt like there was no purpose to it, which I suppose can be the definition of evil. You know, they're just bad stuff for no good reason. But it really did seem. Like, I didn't get the impression that when it was all said and done, was like our solar system at risk, or was this just confined to this one event horizon, or you know,
I don't know.
Where does it go
from
there? Yeah.
Well, they didn't explain anything, so hopefully that means there's not going to be a sequel.
God, please.
Yeah, I don't know if it would have moved into the rest of the solar system. I don't know what. It would be able to open up the black hole or the other side of the other dimension.
Well, they showed it like diving. You talk about the decayed orbit. Didn't they show it crashing into Neptune? Didn't they
show
the black hole?
No, oh no! At the end, that the gravity drive was activated, and the ship went through the gravity hole. Like that showed the event horizon that it was falling into.
Okay, well, maybe it was just camera angle, if you can call it that, showing it above the planet that made it look like it had, like, crashed into the planet for me. Because I wasn't paying attention at that point.
Well, it showed the black hole, like the event horizon, like the funnel that it was falling into. Mm-hmm. But that was, it wasn't crashing into the planet. That would have taken it to wherever it was going, this other, you know, universe of ultimate evil or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
The universe of unicorns and, you know, rainbows.
That's the on the other side. Yeah, and, you know, it's a horror movie, so I guess they don't have to explain anything. But I guess I would, you know, what's the purpose of that, you know, that universe or whatever it is? Just do they derive something from just being evil, or is it just evil? I don't know what to think about it. So
yeah, I don't know either. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess maybe the moral of the story is just don't go around opening up black holes unless you know what you're doing.
Well, that is now. There's another another sci-fi trope. You know, the whole black hole out of control thing. That's been a recurring theme for basically ever since black holes were discovered, the idea of creating a black hole and then they, you know, get out of control and, you know, bad things happen that weren't expected or, you know, you thought you could contain it, but you really can't type of thing. So, yeah, I don't know, you know, black holes, all the negative tropes in this show, you know, they took all of them and just wound them together and made it gory and, you know, horror.
Right. Well, yeah, and then, you know, a few other bits of tech here. Magnetic boots, which, you know, in space travel would be a thing, but also from a filmmaker standpoint, you can have people walk around. You don't have to spend the budget to try and fly them through the air too much. And so that way you can be in zero G and your actors can walk around without having to be on wires and still maintain your zero G. Environment.
I like practical stuff like that because that's something we are really likely to see. Is that something that they have? I wouldn't be surprised if they had him on the International Space Station or something like that, but I've never heard of them.
You mean as a real thing?
Yeah, as a real thing, yeah.
I don't know. I would think that, you know, if you're working on the space station, you would have you'd not want to go flying out. I know they tether usually.
Yeah. I know Velcro. That's what they were using Velcro. That's what Velcro got invented for. Inside.
Oh, inside. Yeah. Yeah. There's a low tech version of that then. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
that's
then,
something. If it doesn't. You know, if they don't use them, it certainly makes sense in certain environments that they would use. I kind of don't think that they'd be used outside, just because, like you said, you'd probably be better off tethering, although it might make you more stable or something like that. But because you don't want to put all of your faith in those boots, because if you did become disconnected, you'd just float away. You'd be way better tethering, right. Is at least maybe having the boots as a backup or something like that, but you'd want to be tethered as well.
Oh, definitely.
Right. Well, and then another question just kind of popped into my head for our current spaceships. How much metallic material is there in the outer shell of, you know, like, say, the space station? Iron is heavy. Wouldn't they have had, you know, it's kind of dense and heavy. Wouldn't they have more space age materials out there that would be, you know, light and, you know, sturdy, but probably wouldn't necessarily be metallic for magnetic boots to even work on?
Wow. That's a very good question. Cause you know, steel is heavy. Iron is heavy. Those are metallic. Aluminum is not heavy. Titanium is not heavy. As far as I know, neither one of those are magnetic.
Right.
So,
you know, with the hull, you might be better to have some sort of like a composite thing, because the hull is really just going to be a pressure vessel, right? So, you know, look what we have. Like for some of the best pressure vessels, if you think of like diving tubes or tanks that have to have pressurized gases or liquids in them, they're just fiberglass, right? So why not? Like, I don't know what the internet, like, it's, I'm the same as Mike.
Aluminum.
I don't know what the International Space
Station. It's aluminum.
Yeah. Yeah, so that wouldn't be, magnetic boots wouldn't work on it anyways.
Aluminum covered with a shield, a blanket, basically. Like bulletproof vest. So, no! It's not magnetic.
Yeah, I wonder if there's sort of like a double hull sort of thing, so with a gel in the middle, because they always talk about the meteor strikes, like micrometeors, like grains of sand or whatever that could puncture. You'd probably want to have something that would kind of like automatically seal any punctures, right?
Or some sort of ballistic gel, yeah, that would absorb
like flat tire stuff.
Yes, yeah, just like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So they've got it full of, you know, 99-cent cans of flat tire fix.
Yeah. Like
budget cuts.
What's,
you know,
that thing? Like if it's dumb and it works, it's not dumb, right?
Right. Yeah.
So and the you know, there's probably simple ways of doing things that are probably more effective than something that's super expensive and
like plastic and duct tape. You know, The Martian.
Yeah. And if you don't, like, if a ship doesn't have to withstand reentry, you know, like we've talked about that before, that I think spaceships that are going to go between like the Earth and Mars and never have to enter an atmosphere, they'll probably end up looking a lot more like an apartment building than anything we think of as a spaceship.
Right.
Yeah, although this the spaceship in this movie was supposedly modeled after Notre Dame. Why? Because.
Really?
I can see that with the shapes and the circles. And
yeah.
Sure.
Like, especially at it from the front.
The stained glass window type things, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah,
that was buried in the trivia here somewhere. Yeah, and like I said, you could. I don't know if it would necessarily be practical or not, but you know, not everything always has to be practical. So it's not the worst thing in the world sometimes to be a little creative, although, you know, if when you're trying to build something, a spaceship, you know, you probably want to build for economy, but you know, you could have a little fun with it, why not.
What else is in here besides blood, you know? The hallucinations / not hallucinations, you know. That was an interesting thing. And one of the comments that they made, too, was that the difference between what they were experiencing and hallucinations was, like, for instance, one of them felt heat. You know, he was seeing a person on fire, and he could feel the heat. And so that was an interesting twist on, you know, the whole space crazy thing.
Well, now you're kind of getting down to semantics. Was it a hallucination, or were they getting inside their head and, you know, playing with it? So then you, because, you know, you could trick your mind into, or, you know, somebody else, because we're dealing with evil here, because why not, could trick you into feeling things just by telling your nerves to feel certain things. So,
yeah, and somebody had made the comment about getting inside my head because they were playing with memories that he had shared with no one. So it was, you know, whatever was going on was going on inside their heads, which is weird. But
yeah, because a hallucination would be like a visual thing. Maybe I'm overthinking this, but you know, a hallucination would be visual, whereas, you know, you're losing your mind. That would be, you know, they could play more tricks with you if they're inside your head.
Oh, definitely. I mean, yeah, you play into each person's individual horrors, you know. So yeah, that's. And it was interesting, too, how things progressed. You know, it started with just these little things, you know. And like I say, everybody's individual horrors, you know, a captain who had to leave a crew member behind, a mother who was concerned for her son, those types of things. And then it just got into plain old, you know, Gates of Hell. So, yeah, it was the mind game part of that was kind of interesting, but that's, you know, what makes horror horror, I suppose. I mean, that's why Psycho is still a great horror movie. It doesn't need special effects or anything visual on screen. Your mind can do it all by itself.
Maybe that's why this movie, one of the reasons why it doesn't work that great, because they never really tapped into anything scary. Like Psycho, The Exorcist, those movies are scary because they tap into your own fears. This is tapping into the, you know, people's, like the character's fears. Like he's, you know, he feels this terrible guilt of leaving this crewman behind, and the medic, I think she's right, guilty that she had to leave her child behind. Well, that's their fears. That's not our fears. Right. So, you know, whereas, you know, like pretty much all you need to be, you know, have the crap scared out of you from in the Exorcist is just to have been raised in a, you know, Christian environment.
Well, and the fear I think that Event Horizon is trying to tap into is this fear of space, this societal fear. It's not your fear, you know. It's the idea that, you know, space is.
How do you mean the fear of space?
Yeah, you know, because if we go into space and go places where we've never been, bad things are going to happen.
Oh,
you
know. Yeah, but that wasn't like. Their fear was more what was going on the ship, not the fact that they were going to be taken away or anything. Yeah.
Yep. No, I get that. But that's when you talk about the movie making part of it, you know, what makes good movies is when, you know, their fear is your fear. And this movie never makes that connection. No point was their fear my fear. This is a great example. I don't particularly like horror movies, but this was an easy one to watch because at no point was I anywhere invested in any of these people. I mean, I never just connected with them, were afraid for them, you know, just, I mean, you basically saw it at the beginning, oh yeah, everybody's going to die, you know. So the question was, you know, just how bad is it going to get before that happens? So you never got all that invested into the characters. Yeah, and even there was brief flash, not even, there. They tried to play with the whole, you know, maybe one or two people survive type of thing, you know, like Gravity. All this bad stuff happens and the one person walks away. And even that, it was like, in this one, it's like, no. Everyone's going to die. Quick, get it over. Just make it stop. Which, you know, again, I go back to the whole thing. Man, this stuff's going down and, you know, your mission is to find out why two other ships got obliterated, and you're running into stuff going down too that's obviously beyond what you can deal with, and has the potential to do bad things to other people and, you know, spread or whatever. That's what self-destruct is all about. You know, so sorry to make that decision, but that is why it's there. So yeah, it's, you know, tiresome. For me, the movie got tiresome after a while.
Yeah.
So was there anything else we wanted to add to this thing? You know, if you're into gore, it's okay. If you're into sci-fi gore, it's probably okay, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not going to... The special effects are fine, whatever. And the gore are fine, whatever. I didn't care. But there were some really nice shots of spaceships and, you know, interior and exterior. I mean, again, I always go back to the graphic artists that have to put together these shots, and it's like, man, coming up with some of these designs and how they're organized and, you know, their depiction of the inside of a ship or their depiction of the outside of the ship, some of those were pretty top-notch in this one. They were real believable and real, on that edge between recognizable and a little bit different than what you've seen before. So I thought that some of those imaginings were pretty decent.
Okay. You know, we usually ask the question, was there any tech in here that any of you guys wanted?
Not a gravitational engine, okay? No.
Not one that'll open up the gates to hell? Yeah. No, that would suck.
They figured out, is it just me? Were they Skyping like from Neptune to Earth, or were those transmissions, you know, like months later?
Oh, I don't
recall.
I don't remember them seeing them Skyping anybody.
Yeah, no, right. The mom had essentially, for lack of a better term, an iPad, and she was looking at video of her son, and I wasn't paying too close of attention to recognize whether that was a recording or if that was live interaction. And it would have been hard to tell anyway, I think, because she was responding to what she was seeing, you know, by waving and doing some other things. So those signals may or may not have been clear as to whether it was a recording or live. So,
right.
You know. But yeah. I mean, if they figured out how to get instantaneous communications on an iPad between Neptune and Earth, I want that.
Well, yeah, they've already then you wouldn't need gravity drive. Just do whatever, whatever's happening there.
There you go. Jeff, was there anything that tweaked your fancy? Or?
Well, I like the idea of a spaceship where you can travel around the solar system in. Like the faster-than-light travel would be great to do as well, but I think I'd like to stay within our own universe.
Yeah. Or at least something that resembles our universe.
Yeah, and not the universe of ultimate evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not go there. I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot to tweak me. I don't know, maybe a gravity chamber with spikes in it just for no apparent reason. I don't know.
Stasis pod?
There we go. Yeah, I feel like going into stasis during most of the winter months. So, yeah, maybe that's it. I'd go with the stasis pod. Well, that wraps up this episode of Sci-Fi Tech Talk. You can check us out at scifitechtalk.com and pop into the forums there to take part in the conversation. Or follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Tech Talk. If you have any ideas or comments, please send them to greetings@scifitechtalk.com, and reviews on iTunes are always welcome. Julie, where can people find you?
I can be found on Twitter at Julie Kuehl, JulieKuehl. And links to the other blogs, podcasts, and whatever else I've got going on can be found at about.me/Julie Kuehl.
And Jeff, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at BroncoSire. That's S-Y-E-R.
And I can be found on Twitter at DSC Chipman, and I have my about.me page at about.me/Mike McPeak. And if you want to hear more of my ramblings, you can check me out with Kevin Alder, Elisa Pacelli, and Melissa Davis over on Geekiest Show Ever. That's at geekiestshowever.com. And next week, we will be covering the 2000 movie Pitch Black. A commercial transport ship and its crew are marooned on a planet full of bloodthirsty creatures that only come out to feast at night, but then they learn that a month-long eclipse is about to occur. Sounds strangely like this one. Anyway.
I was going to say, here we go again, huh?
There we go. Get the blood and gore ready. But that's it for this show, and we'll see you in the future.
Quirky matter. Quirky matter. Quirky matter. Yes, the Sci-Fi Tech Talk.